So we're holding on Hey Dalit Omar Aleph, two lines from the bottom. Okay, so we've been talking about the our Mishnah told us that most Korbanos Tzibur can come from Eretz Yisrael or Chutz La'aretz, and they can come from old or new crops, except for the Omer and the Shea Lechem. And we got into a discussion where we had a Braita that said that actually even the Omer and the Shea Lechem can come from Yashan if necessary. And we had a further discussion about, we had a further opinion of Yosef ben Yehuda, who said they could also come from Chutz La'aretz. Okay. So the Gemara says Tanan Hosta.
By the questioning of how do they do during Shmita?
Well, no, that was a separate discussion. What do we do during Shmita? And the answer is that they have people guarding it. But the answer to the question is, why do we have to do it that way rather than bringing it from last year's? Because you are supposed to bring it from this year's, if at all possible. Okay. Tanan Hosta. We learned a Mishnah in Bikurim. Ein Mavin Bikurim Chut Meshivat Amim. You don't bring Bikurim from anything other than the Shivat Amim. And continues the Mishnah, even among the Shivat HaMinim themselves, there are exceptions. Morim Shabaharim, you can't bring from dates that grow in the mountains. Now, dates are one of the Shivat HaMinim, but if they grow in the mountains, so Rashi Ksavyad says they're too sweet, and then Rashi on the top says just that the Lefishen Kushim, they're no, but okay, so I guess because they're more exposed to the sun, so therefore more of their starch gets converted to sugar or whatever, so therefore they're, and then Rashi on the top, so Miyochas Rashi says just that Lafishen Kushin, that they're weak. Whatever, they're not good quality. Rolling with Paris Shabbat Mokim, and also not from other kind, and also not from grain that grew in the valley. Because again, that's not the best quality. Grain is better if it comes from mountainous areas, as we'll discuss later. Alma Ula, so Ula says on this, in Hevi Lekiddush, it doesn't just mean that L'Hachila you shouldn't be bringing dates from the mountains, etc., but if you did, but yeah, but it's acceptable. If you brought it, they don't have it. It's Dusha of the Kurdish. Which would mean, basically, according to Ula, it would mean if you have a plantation of dates where all of your date palms are on mountains, you can't bring Shabbat Aminim from dates. You're going to have to bring some other ones. Okay. Yosef Rabba v'kamal ola hoshmaita. So now Rabba is sitting and saying over the statement of Ola, a spirit of Achaba Abba l'Rabba. But Achaba Abba says, I have a contradiction. A braita says, it says about the Omer, korban reisha. So it's going to be a long braita. In the middle of the braita, we're going to see the point that Rav Achaba Abba wants to bring as a contradiction to Rabba against Ula. But first of all, we're going to go through the whole Braisa. So like this, the pasuk says korban reishis, a first korban is the Omer, meaning to say reishis for all menachos, means it has to be first among all the menachos. As we've learned earlier in the Masechta, you can't bring menachos from the new grain crop of that year from before the Omer is brought. And similarly, we have, as far as the Shkei Lechem, where it also says that you offer a new mincha to Hashem on Shavuot. Next, continues the Braita. Well, based on that then, you would think that maybe it's similar to the Shkei Lechem, that you just can't bring new menachas made out of wheat flour. How do we know the same rule would apply? How do we know that the same rule would apply to barley that you also can't bring it before the Shkei Lechem? So now Rashi Ksavyad says this is how his Rebbe explained it. But the question is how we know that you can't bring barley as for example mincha sota before the Shkei Lechem. Rashi says, what are you talking about? By that time you've already brought the Omer. You already brought barley that year.
Because, in other words, why
is the Braita telling us that you can't bring barley before the Shkei Lechem? Obviously, you can bring barley, you bring the Omer. The Rashi prefers to explain that the question is how we know that what it means is how do we know that just that we know that the Shkei Lechem has to be the first mincha of wheat that year. In other words, it comes out, according to Rashi, that you would actually, after the Omer, you would be allowed to bring barley from that year for a korban of a sota. Most other Rishonim disagree with Rashi on that. They say that, no, when we learned before in the Masechta of Chila, you're only supposed to, b'dieved, fine, if you bring any mincha of wheat or barley after the Omer, b'dieved is kosher. We just say, l'chila, you're supposed to wait for the Shkei Lechem. According to Rashi, it would actually be a difference between wheat or barley. Barley, apparently, it sounds like according to Rashi, the Braita is telling us l'chila, you can bring it even as long as it's after the Omer. And only when it comes to wheat, do you have l'chila to wait for the Shkei Lechem.
what's so pressing about the
nothing so pressing, but the point, because the point is that the Minchas Torah is made out of barley. It's not made out of wheat. Therefore,
you, wait after the
of course you could wait, and you could also bring some last year's barley. But in other words, according to Rashi, it sounds like you could do it that way. However, Shita Mekubetzis counters and says, look, on the other hand, you could argue against Rashi, well, we don't need to be told you can't bring anything before the Omer. Obviously, before the Omer, you can't eat it. And if you can't eat it, you can't bring it to the Korban. So therefore, obviously, it must mean, like Rashi's Rebbe's explanation, and that's how indeed most Rishonim, how most Rishonim learn, that the question is how we know that not only wheat, but also barley can't be brought before the Shalachem. Therefore, the Pasuk twice mentions this concept of Mincha Chadasha. It mentions it, twice actually says, regarding the Shalachem itself, the word Mincha Chadasha. Once in Parshas Emor, and again in Parshas Simcha. So therefore, one of them is extra. In Eina Inyan, Chadasha Shochitin, since we only need one of them to tell us that it has to be the new one of wheat, and we don't need the second one for the same purpose, Tneo Inyan, Lachadasha Shochitin. So therefore, apply it instead. That it means that also barley has to be new, as far as that no wheat or barley has been offered that year before the Shalachim. Again, it's not Ma'akiv, with the evidence kosher, but we're talking about Chadasha.
You know, again, it's not like this. So
because then it would have to be repeated twice, and it's not. I mean, it's repeated twice, but we're saying one's as far as wheat, one's as far as barley.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
That's why I said Mincha Seitan, Shteira,
it's
two different things.
No. So according to Rashi, that's the thing. Rashi is bringing two explanations. One is that the Gemara was asking, how do you know that you're not allowed to bring even a Mincha of Seita, which is made out of barley, that you're not allowed to bring it before the Shteira Lechem? And the answer is because the second Kadosha. And Rashi's second explanation is, how do you know that davka wheat menachos? How would we know that you're not allowed to bring a mincha of barley before the omer? And the answer would be because again, it says twice chadasha, so one refers to the omer and one refers to the shteilech.
You can use the second chadash twice.
That's because you have the word chadasha twice. It's two different explanations. According to one explanation, the question was like this, that you can't bring anything before the Omer, that's a given. According to Rashi's Rebbe's explanation, that you can't bring it before the Omer, that's a given, because you can't eat it yet, as Shita Mekubetzis says. So the question is, so if we only have one pasuk regarding the Shalachem, that it has to be Chadasha, then you can't bring any wheat menachos before that. How do we know that you can't bring barley menachos? That's the second Chadasha tells us that. According to Rashi's preferred explanation, rather what it is, if we only have one chadasha, you would know that you can't bring them before the you would think that you could bring at least barley before the omer, and so therefore you have one chadasha teaches you that you can't bring wheat until the shteilech, and then another one that you can't bring barley until the omer, but after the omer you could bring barley. Okay,
that's the second explanation.
That's the second explanation, which Rashi prefers, but again most of the Rishonim don't know that. Okay. They learn that the same rules apply as far as wheat and barley. You can't bring them before the Omer. Lachatchila, you shouldn't bring them between the Omer and the Shalachem, but yeah, but if you did, it's acceptable. And after the Shalachem, you can bring them. Okay. That's not the main part of the Braisa that we're trying to focus on as far as the contradiction to Ullah. So let's continue. Uminayan Shateka Demeth for the Bikurim continues the Braisa. How do we know that the Shalachem has to be brought before you start bringing Bikurim? So you have a pasuk like this. The Chag Shavuos Tasa Lachal Bikurik Tirchitin. The pasuk says the Yom Tov of Shavuos you should make for yourself the first of the wheat harvest. Meaning, in other words, so it means first Tasa Lachal, you make a Yom Tov Shavuos. After that, you can bring Bikurik Tirchitin. After that, you can start bringing Bikurim from your wheat and from your other produce.
It's one pasuk.
The Chag Shavuos, Tasa Lachal, Bikurik Tirchitin. So implying first there has to be the Chag Shavuos, Tasa Lachal, that you make for yourself a Yom Tov of Shavuos, and then you can start bringing the Bikurik Tirchitin.
You could read it, Chag Shavuos, Tasa Lachal, Bikurik Tirchitin.
B'chag Shavuos Tasa Lachal. You should make for yourself a Shavuos, and then Bikurik Tirchitin. Rashi brings a second explanation, that it means that what you bring on Shavuos, namely the Shalachem, has to be the first thing of the wheat harvest that's brought that year as a carbon. Okay. Not as a carbon, but meaning that not as a carbon, we just dealt with that before, but that you bring into the Beit HaMikdash as Bikurim. Okay. The Eilei Ela Bikurik Tirchitim, now you would only know from that applies to wheat, and how do we know that barley also, you can't bring Bikurim or barley before Shavuos? Again, you have another pasuk elsewhere in Parasha. There's the pasuk that we just quoted now was in Kitisa. You have another one in Mishpatim that also mentions as far as Shavuot the Yom Tov of harvest, which is Shavuot, Bikurei Masta Chasha Chizur Basadim, which is the first of your work that you plant in the field. So therefore, that means anything you plant, so that covers both wheat and barley. It has to be that you don't start bringing them as recorded before Shavuot. The only the one for wheat, one for barley. But the only elish.
We said the okay.
Yeah, the only elish tizra. However, from that second pasuk, you would only know that it's true as far as wheat or barley that you planted. Olu me'elehin minayin. How do we know it also applies? Let's say it grew on its own, spichim, like we said before. That you can't bring recorded from them either before Shavuot. How do we know that? Therefore, the person doesn't say that you plant. It adds the extra word, that you plant in the field. That word is extra. So it means anything that grows in the field. The ainli ela basada. Next, we would only know then that if it actually grows in the field, meaning in the ground, minayin l'raba, and this is the key part, this is why we're bringing this braisa, minayin l'raba shabagag. How do we know it also includes that if you have grain growing on your roof? Remember, roofs in those days. Why not? Your roofs are
growing on the roof.
No, roofs in those days were flat, and houses and roofs were often made out of dirt. But we'll discuss later. We'll discuss the different kinds of roofs. But whatever you have, your roof could well be made out of dirt or whatever straw or whatever. There'd be room for plants to grow over there. So how do we know if you have plants growing on your roof, the shavachurva, or in a ruin, so you have a broken down house that you use to plant in? Sheba otis, or that's in a flower pot, the sheba spina, or in a boat. I mean, how do we know by all of those also that you can't bring bikurim from those before the omer? Talmud lema bikurim kol asher ba'asim. So we have yet another pasuk that mentions the bikurim of everything that's in their land goes to the kohen. Everything that's in their land includes roofs and broken down houses and so forth. Okay. Next, continues the braisa. Minayin should take kedemus. Now, that's the part, by the way, that we're going to bring as a kasha, because the Gemara is going to assume at this point that grain that grows in those places on a roof or in a churva or whatever is not very high quality. And yet, we're saying you can bring the korim from them, just not before Shavuot. So what about all that which said before that you have to bring only the good quality stuff? That's going to be the key thing. But let's finish off the braisa first. Minayin should take kedemus when the sochem will pay the seilon. Fine. So far, we only know about wheat and barley. How do we know that the shelachem also has to be brought to the Beis Mikdash before you use the sochem from that year's new crop of wine, and that you can't bring the kurim of the other fruits, of the other five shivas aminim, which are all fruits? Like, how do we know you can't bring any of those?
Like, you know that you cannot bring it.
So two things. Number one, that you have that the nisachim, that where you bring wine, or oil for that matter, you can't bring before the shtelachem from the new year's crop. So far all we have is ashachizra basada, which means that you plant. You don't plant these other things. You don't plant seeds for them usually. Usually you plant cuttings or whatever. You bend down a twig from one and then whatever. You don't usually plant seeds to grow these kinds of things because it won't come. Shizra is only planting seeds, right? So how do we know that it also includes nisachim, which are made from wine, and that it also includes bikurim of dates and figs and so forth? So how do we know that? So we have a zershah. Here it mentions in connection with Shavuot, Bikurei Ma'asecha, the first of your work in the field, which is in connection with Shavuot. B'nem alahalan ba'asecha es ma'asecha min asada. Later on, you have it discusses about Sukkot, and it mentions that Sukkot takes place when you gather in your produce from the field. Ma'alahalan nesachem l'peir filin. Now, what are you gathering in on Sukkot? Everything. You have, at that point, you have your nesachem, because at that point, everything has been harvested. Now you're gathering it in, and Sukkot is also wine making time. So Afkan Nesachim Operes Ilam, the same thing. When it comes to Shavuot, the word Ma'asecha includes not just wheat and barley, but also all the other five meats. Okay, so thus far the bride. Now the point is Katanim Yev Shavagag Shavachorba Shavasis Shavaspina. Now the bride mentioned things that grow on a roof or in a ruin or in a flower pot or on a ship. Anne was saying that you could bring Bikurim from them, just that you can't bring them before Shavuos. So what about Ulo, who said that you have to bring only from the best quality of the particular type? No, Ulo said, imhevi like Kiddush. Ulo said, if you brought dates that grew on the mountains, for example, they don't have the Kiddush of Bikurim. So here from the Braita we see that you could, that you could bring from the lesser quality stuff. The answer is Sefer Achton Lamanophis. That Sefer of the Braita, when it mentions, how do we know also Shabbat Gag, Shabbat Chorba, Shabbat Otis, Shabbat Spina, is not talking about Bikurim. That Torah is talking about Menophis. In other words, the Braita started by asking how we know that Menophis from the new crop can't be brought until the Shtelachim is brought. And we brought Skukim for that. Then we discussed, okay, how do we know the same thing is true as far as the Bikurim of wheat and barley? And we brought the Skukim over there, we brought the Skukim Bikurik Sirchitim and Masecha Shetizra Basada. Now, the Braita is going back to Menachos and asking, how do we know as far as grain that grows on a roof, etc., that you allow, that if you're going to use it for Menachos, you still have to wait until after Shavuot. Up until now, we only had Asher Tizra Basada, only that you plant in the field, or even, okay, that grows by itself in the field, because Basada, that you can't bring it from Menachos before Shavuot. We didn't yet know that you can't bring them from Menachos before Shavuot if they grew on a roof. So that's the point. That's the point. In other words, that's why we have another pasuk, Bikurim Kol Asher Ba'aretz. But in other words, even though we're mentioning in connection with Bikurim, what the Braita is actually saying is, from there we know that the same rules apply to grain, whether it grows in the field or whether it grows on the roof, that either way, if you're going to bring it from Menachos, and that you could bring from Menachos. Ideally, also Menachos, you bring the best, but the Dieved, definitely, if you bring lower quality, it is kosher, unlike Ola is saying with Bikurim. So therefore, no, that's the thing. Ola was talking about Bikurim. So Bikurim, if you bring lower quality stuff, it doesn't have the scripture of Bikurim. But Menachos, it is. So therefore, the Braita is telling us, if you were to bring grain that grows on a roof, etc., for Menachos, it's okay, b'dieved, but you still can't do it before Shavuot. That we learn from Bikurim Masach. That's Bikurim Kol Asher
Ba'aretz. How do we know that here we're talking about, we're not talking about Bikurim?
Well, that's the point, because in other words, Ola can explain the Braita that way. If we don't agree with Ola, we don't have to. We could say the Braita is indeed talking about Bikurim, but if according to Ola, he will have to explain that part of the Braita is talking about using them for Menachos.
He wouldn't have any other explanation.
Well, the problem with that still is, maskiflar of adabahava, he hochi, if you're going to explain that part of the braita is talking about Menachos, einu dechiv, what about? So the pasuk that we quoted, Bikurim Kol Asher Ba'aretzam, continues, kol tahor beveit kol yochaloi. So anybody who's tahor in your household can eat it, which means, in other words, that we're talking about something where the kohen himself, as well as any members of his family, as long as they're tahor, his wife, his kids, his avadim kananim, can eat it, just like Tzrimah. Now the problem is, we're talking about a korban mincha. That's not lezichre kohuna odu mesachon. A mincha is only eaten by the male kohenim, only in the azara. So obviously, if we're quoting a pasuk bikurei kol asher ba'artem, it has to be talking about actual bikurei, because those bikurim are like truma in that the kohen and his family can eat them. The only rule about it is not like truma that it can be eaten anywhere in Eretz Yisrael. It has to be eaten in Yerushalayim. Fine, but still kol torah beveit kol yechalo. So therefore, so what are you doing?
Absolutely.
Can't be talking about Menachos.
Menachos.
The answer is Amar of Mesharshia, Tirei Kroik. Okay, but Mesharshia says you have two different psukim that are in this context. L'choyia, you have one pasuk that says Bikurei Kol Asher Ba'aretzam, not two psukim, but two halves of the pasuk. You have, the whole pasuk goes like this. Bikurei Kol Asher Ba'aretzam, Asher Yaviu L'Hashem, L'choyia, the Bikurim of everything that's in their land, which they bring to Hashem, should be for you, meaning the Kohen. In the Kohenim, called Torah, but basically, you can wonder anybody who's Torah in your household can eat it. So now, Ksiv
L'Choyi,
I mean, right. So L'Choyi implies it should be only for you, meaning you, Aaron, and people like you, meaning male Kohenim. Ksiv, called Torah, but basically, but then the apostle continues, anybody who's Torah in your household can eat it. So what is it? Are we talking about something that can be eaten only by Kohenim? L'Choyi implies only for people like you, males. But then kol tahor b'beitcha implies that anybody who's tahor, your wife, your children, etc. Okay, that's so, says Rav Mesharshia, therefore we have to say the pasuk itself is talking about two things. Can be bikurim, can be menachos. One part of the pasuk is talking about bikurim. On that it says kol tahor b'beitcha, and where's the word? L'choyi are referring to menachos. Very well then. So Ula can say, when we quoted the pasuk bikurim, The logic is that we have l'chol yiyeh means only for you and people like you, only male kohen, only the kohenim themselves. Kol tohu b'beit chayechlan means also your wife and children and avodim. So therefore,
what mean kol tohu b'beit chayechlan means kol tohu
because then it wouldn't say kol tohu b'beit chayechlan. B'beit chayechlan means anybody in your household, means wives, children, etc. So therefore, what it means is l'chol yiyeh is referring to menachos. That kol tohu b'beit chayechlan is referring to whatever is referring to Bikurim. So very well then.
So,
Bikurim, the wives and children can eat. Menachos they can't. Menachos can only be eaten in the Azara by Zichrei Kohana, by male Kohanim. It's kosher kosher. Whereas Bikurim are one of the Matnas Kohana. They have to be eaten in Yerushalayim. In that sense, they're like kosher Menachim, but the family can eat them. So therefore, so fine. So Ula can say then, when the Pasuk is telling us, when we're quoting in the Braita, Bikurei kol asher ba'artam, and we're learning from that that also, therefore, grain that grew on a roof, etc., is included, then that refers, they're included as far as Menachos. They're not included as far as Bikurim, because Bikurim are different. Bikurim is supposed to be that you're bringing the best quality of what grows in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, we can find the Braita according to Ula. Because what it says, Bikurei kol asher ba'artam, the first of everything that's in their land. So it means, though, that it means you do have to be bringing the shtei alechem first. The shtei alechem have to be the bikurim of the crop that we're offering, that we're offering for this year. Why are you having them taken away?
No. Do you want to come along with that?
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, when it says Bikurei kol asher ba'artam, it means ultimately you have to be bringing Bikurim of Shtei Alechem before you're starting to offer these menachos. But once you do, you can offer kol asher ba'artam, anything that grows in their land, even if it grew on a roof, and use it for menachos.
That's the story.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the explanation.
Rav Ashi says you don't even need that. Kulei b'menachos. You could say the entire passage is talking about menachos, not about Bikurim. The Sefer Dekrasa on the Lachmei Toida, the end of the passage called Torah Beveit Chayechlanu, is referring to Lachmei Toida, which are a type of mincha, but they also come only from flour. So we don't have to say that any part of the passage is talking about Bikurim that you would bring from figs or dates, etc. We're talking strictly about flour.
Like
but one part is talking about a mincha, which is kodshe kodshim, and one part is talking about the lachmei toida, which are kodshim kalim.
It would be more consistent, actually.
Okay, so that's why Rav Ashi. Yes, so that's why Rav Ashi prefers that explanation. Okay, fine. So the Gemara points out the kodshe. Now we actually, this set Ula was set, so we had Ula's statement that if you bring, for example, dates that grew on the mountains, then they don't have the kedusha of Bikurim. And Rav Acha bar Abba is arguing with that on the basis of the Braita that we said, and apparently Rav Abba bar Abba also, and they seem to be saying it's a birch to explain the Braita that way. So then we'll point out the kedusha. We have the same machlokas in an earlier generation of Amiroi. This machlokas about whether dates from the mountains, etc., are kosher as Bikurim. Rabbi Yochanan Amim Hevi LeKiddush. Rabbi Yochanan says, like Ula, if you bring dates from the mountains and they don't have the kedusha of Bikurim, Rish Lakish Amim Hevi Kiddush. Rish Lakish says, no, if you bring such dates, they are kodesh. Not it's a kachush for kodeshim. It's the equivalent of bringing an animal for kodeshim, where it was a skinny animal. We don't say that a skinny animal is if you bring it, it doesn't have the kedusha of kodeshim. Of course, it has the kedusha. It wasn't the best thing to do. But you still use it. It's still valid for a korban as long as it's not a baal mum.
Right.
Yeah. But the Gemara says, okay, I can understand Rish Lakish. He gave the reason because it should be like Hodgkin. El Rav Yochanan my time. Taka, why does Rav Yochanan say that if you bring and Ula say that if you bring such fruit that it's bechlal even b'diavad no good?
Why Rish Lakish is
Rish Lakish? We understand. He said it's like a skinny animal for Hodgkin. But why is Rav Yochanan and Ula insisting that it's either the best quality or nothing? Yeah. Amar Rav Elazar, so Rav Elazar says like this. All this time we didn't know Rav Yochanan's reason. But Rav Yochanan chazoi b'chaloim, but I saw Rav Yochanan in a dream. Apparently this was after Rav Yochanan had passed away. Therefore, milta malyasa amina. So I know that tomorrow, in the Beis Medrash, I'm going to be able to give a good reason for what Rav Yochanan is saying.
No,
not you interpreting dreams. I have a reason of my own. But the fact that I saw Rav Yochanan in my dream tells me that the explanation that I came up with is a good one, and Rav Yochanan himself would approve of it. Namely, it's like this, Omar Pro, because the Potik says, Meireshis, the Potik says that you bring Meireshis, from Meireshis Kopri Adama, from the first of all the fruit of the ground, meaning Veloi Koreshis, so not any kind of vegan. It has to be the good quality. So first of all, so that Meireshis means as opposed to other Peres, as opposed to other Minim other than the Shivat HaMinim. So you don't bring Bikurim from apples or bananas or whatever on the basis of Meireshis. And Mei Arsacha, then when the Pasuk continues, that you bring Mei Arsacha, that's also a mere Veloi Kol Arsacha. It means not anything that grows, not anything of the Shivat HaMinim that grows in your land, only the good quality stuff. Okay, so then the question is, but a shlokish high mei arsecho, really, my ovid light. So, okay, what is the shlokish going to do with the mei arsecho? The answer is, mi boile, because he said that, but the evidence, you bring the lower quality stuff, you're yours. The answer is, mi boile, mei arsecho, voloi ko arsecho. Okay, the shlokish will say, what it means is that, I went back a line. Mi boile lachidetan, he learns it for what we learn in a braita as follows. We have the pasuk over here that you bring mei arsecha. You have the pasuk that lists the shivat haminim, that eretz chito soira, etc. Malahalon shvach eretz. So just like over there, the pasuk is listing the species that are the pride of Eretz Yisrael. That's why the pasuk is telling Hashem is telling the Moshe is telling the Jewish people, Hashem's name, you come into a very fertile and to a very fertile land that has these seven species growing in it. Afkan shvat eretz. The same thing over here. The bikurim that you're bringing are meant to be the pride of Eretz Yisrael. In other words, what it means is like this. We're not going to say like Ula or like Rabbi Yochanan that you can't bring dates from the mountains at all. You could bring dates from the mountains, but even within those, you still have to bring the best possible ones that you have available there. You only have, in other words, according to Ula and according to Rabbi Yochanan, if you only have date trees on the mountains, tough luck. You can't bring dates for Bikurim. According to the Shlokish, what he's saying, what we learn from Mei Arzacha is you still have to try to bring the best of what you do have within the Shiva Thamim. So if all you have is date palms on the mountains, fine, bring from those, but bring the best of what you have from those.
And that's because
it says Mei Arzacha. Yeah. Okay, the Ijach, so what would Rabbi Yochanan answer to that? Thank you very much.
Table.
So the question is the Idach. So okay, what would Rabbi Yochanan do with that? Why doesn't he agree with that Svara? He's going to say you can't bring dates from the mountains at all, but doesn't he also agree, fine, you have date palms that grow in the valley, he would still agree, you can't just pick any old ones, you have to pick the best ones to bring us before him. No, Rabbi Yochanan. So doesn't he agree that you have to... The question is, what is Rabbi Yochanan do? Rosh Lakish is saying, because it says Arsacha and we're learning this Zer Shabbat,
right.
that it has to be Shvach Eretz Yisrael. Doesn't Rabbi Yochanan agree with the basic concept that not only you have to bring only, that Rabbi Yochanan is saying you have to bring the stuff that to begin with is better quality, but also that within that itself, you have to bring the best within that? The answer is Eretz Mei Eretz. He says, yes, the Pasuk could have said Eretz, or Arsacha rather, and instead it says, first of all, it didn't have to say the word Arsacha at all, it says that. Second of all, it says Mei Arsacha. So therefore, you can learn both things. That it has to be from some place where it grows well, meaning, for example, with dates, it means in the valley. And second of all, even within that, it has to be the best of what grows in the valley.
So the answer is the Idach.
So what would Rish Lakish answer to that? The answer is Eretz Mei Eretz Loi Mashmalei. He doesn't hold that you can learn something separate from Arsacha and from Mei Arsacha. Because the fact is, what would the Pasuk have said? Asher Tovi Arsacha? That's not grammatically correct. So therefore, you can't learn anything extra from the Mei. No, that's the point. It says Mei Arsacha. Rabbi Yochanan is arguing it didn't have to say Mei Arsacha at all, and if it did, it could have said Arsacha. So therefore, you can learn from the Mei and you can learn from Arsacha. The Shlokish counters, it couldn't have said Arsacha, because that wouldn't fit grammatically in the Pasuk. Therefore, we only have one thing that we're learning from that, namely that it does have to be Shvach Eretz Yisrael as much as possible, meaning it should be the best quality of what you have. but not that we're going to say like Rabbi Yochanan that it has to be mei artzicha, that you can't bring from certain areas in Eretz Yisrael, for example, dates from the mountains at all. No, you could bring from those, says Rosh Lakish, just within that you have to bring the best that you have.
And
Rabbi Yochanan would
from both,
from artzicha and mei artzicha, right? So that takes care of that then. So we've established then that we have a machloikas on this topic of whether you can bring bikurim from such places or not. Okay. Now Tony Choda, now in one place, we learn in a braisa, Shabagag Shabakhurb, now let's return to bikurim. So we mentioned before in the braisa, we mentioned a case where you have grain or whatever growing on a roof or in a ruin or in a flower pot or in a ship. So Tony Choda, one braisa teaches us, Shabagag Shabakhurb Shabatit Shabaspina may be bikurim. One braisa tells us that you can bring bikurim from such places and you can say the stufim that are in Parshas Kisavai that you're supposed to say when you bring bikurim. The Tanya Edach, and another Braisa says, maybe the Ene Kore. And then another Braisa says, you can bring such fruit, but you can't say the Pesukim. So how do we reconcile that? So Bishlema Rish Lakish, so now let's first of all work according to Rish Lakish. According to Rish Lakish, it's not a problem, because Gag Agag like Hasha, because Rish Lakish will say there's no contradiction between the two cases of a roof. Ha Begag de Ma'ora, Ha Begag de Bayis. One is talking about, according to Rish Lakish, remember, we said according to Rav Yochanan, you can't be bringing low quality food at all. So therefore, according to him, you can't, on the face of it, you can't be bringing from a roof or a ruin, etc. That actually, the Rosh wants to say, and it's possible that Rashi also holds this way, that actually the Gemara is not worried so much about the roof or about the Chorva. Fine, stuff that grows in those places might be good enough quality, even according to Rav Yochanan. The question would really be on the second two, the flower pot and the ship. But anyway, so according to the Shlokish, Gaga Gag, like, because you could say that. Yeah. So Gaga Gag, like Hashi, we could say according to the Shlokish, the two cases involving a roof are not a contradiction. Hob Gag de Ma'ora, Hob Gag de Bayis. Because one is talking about the roof of a cave, where the roof of a cave is just the natural dirt that was originally there. So obviously, yeah, in other words, if you have a cave and then you have the dirt, the couple of feet of dirt above the cave, and you have grain growing in that dirt, it's part of the ground, of course you can bring the corn from it. And you can say the stuking. Oh, but Gag the Bias and the Shlokish would say, where is it growing? On the roof of a house. Then you can bring the corn from it also, even though it's lower quality, you just can't say the stuking. You just can't say the stuking on it, because not really may out the stuff so much. And churba to churba like Hasha, and churba a churba like Hasha. You could say, according to Rish Lakish, there's no contradiction either between the two cases of grain growing in a ruined house, because kan b'churba avuda, kan b'churba she'ena avuda, because one could be talking about a ruin that you actually work the ground, you actually, even though it's a ruin, there's the ruins of a house over there, you do, you actually plow it and plant it or whatever, whereas the other one, kan b'churba she'ena avuda, the other one would be talking about where you didn't actually work it, it just grew there on its own. So therefore, if you worked it, you can say the psukim. If you didn't, then you can't. And osis like Kasha, then you could go further and say there's no contradiction between the two cases of the flower pot, because kan b'nokru, kan b'she'enin nokru. One's talking about where the flower pot has a hole. So then, as we know throughout Shas, the flower pot with a hole, whatever grows in it is considered like it actually grew in the ground. So that may be the case. And the other one is talking about when it doesn't have a hole, then maybe the ene kore. You can bring the kore from it, but you don't say the psukim. And spina like Asha, and there wouldn't be a contradiction either according to the Shlokish between the two brises about a ship, because can be spinishal eight, can be spinishal chet. One would be talking about a ship made out of wood, and the other one would be talking about a ship made out of earthenware. So which one would be which? Here you actually have, Rashi just mentioned briefly that the one made out of earthenware would be maybe the Kore. You could bring the Bikurim from it and say the Psukim, because Yochas Rashi says, Mishum de Shal Eretzi, because it can be considered that it grew in the ground. Because earthenware, after all, is made from clay. It comes from the ground, whereas wood not. Yeah. Tosfos gets into a long discussion about the pros and cons of this. So, and it turns out there's a Mishnah Lamelach that actually summarizes, you have four different shittas on the subject. You have Rashi over here, who's saying that a flower pot, is with, that, 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 or not a flower pot, a ship that's made out of earthenware you can automatically, whatever grows in it, it's considered like it's growing in the ground. As opposed to if it's made out of wood, it would have to have a hole. And with a ship, obviously, you're not going to have a hole in it. Tosfos discusses that it may be the other way around. That if it's a wooden ship, even if it has a hole, it wouldn't help. Because eventually what happens is that eventually you have dirt and whatever collects over there and closes up the hole. And it sticks well to the wood, so therefore the hole doesn't really stay open permanently. Whereas with earthenware, it will. Then Tosfos brings that Rabbeinu Tam formally explained the other way around, that if it's wood, you don't need a hole at all. With earthenware, you would need a hole, because otherwise, how are the roots of the plants going to get any nourishment from the ground? But if it has wood, if it's made out of wood, then you don't need a hole, because the wood itself absorbs moisture. And then you have, and then the Mishnah Lamelach brings a fourth opinion from the Ravid, who says that the difference is a ship made out of wood has holes in it, because they put holes in it for the oars and whatever. A ship made out of earthenware, they're not going to make holes in it for the oars because it would break. So therefore, according to him, it has to have holes, but therefore, only if it's a wooden one of necessity. It has holes, therefore, maybe it could, but earthenware not. So those are the four opinions on the subject. Anyway, so that's all according to the Shlokish. El a little Yechanan Kasha, but according to Rav Yechanan, who says that you can't bring from lower quality fruit Bikurim in the first place. So according to him, how do you have, two braises. Both of them are saying you can bring Bikurim from them. Just one says you say it's Sukkim and one says you don't. What is Rav Yechanan going to do with those braises? The answer is Tanoi. Rav Yechanan will say it's actually a machloka Tanoi. We have Tanoim who hold that you can't bring such things. But you have, which is like Rabbi Yechanan is saying. So according to Rosh Lakish, everybody would agree that you can bring them. It's just a machlokas whether you say it's Sukkim or not. According to Rabbi Yechanan, you would have three opinions. One that says you can't, you can bring them. One that would say that you can't bring them at all. Another one that would say maybe they're in a coda. And a third one that would say maybe the coda, that you could say it's Sukkim as well. Rosh Lakish is saying everybody agrees you can bring them. Yeah, well, we have braises. Neither Rav Yechanan nor Rosh Lakish can contradict braises. Obviously, there are braises that say that you can bring. Rav Yechanan has to concede to that. But Rav Yechanan is saying, the fact is, you have another Tana that says that you can't bring them at all. I go according to that Tana. It's a Tana, as we learn in a braise. Shavagag v'shavachurva meyu v'kore. Stuff that grew on a roof, that grew on a roof or in a rune. Maybe the Kurde, those you could bring and you could say to Sukkim. And Rashi Ksavyad explains, we mean, when we say a roof, we mean, like we said before, the roof of a cave. When we say a rune, we mean one where you actually work the ground, which Rosh Lakish had said before, maybe the Kurde. So Rav Yechanan would say, that's what the Braitha means. Shabbat Otis, Shabbat Sina, any maybe, call it, but if it grows in a flower pot or in a ship, then you can't bring from it at all, because it's bad, so therefore, so there you go. So Rav Yechanan says, so you have a proof for my opinion. And by the way, we have different braises. So we have a braise that says maybe the kore. We have one that says maybe the ein kore. And Rabbi Yechanan is saying, here's a third braise that says if it comes from a flower pot or from a spina, doesn't matter whether it has a hole or not, doesn't matter whether it's made out of wood or earthenware or what have you, ein maybe kol ikka, you can't bring it, not because it doesn't get nourishment from the ground, but because it's low quality.
Each pasuk is for a different purpose, basically.
Not each pasuk is for a different, what do you mean?
According to
Rabbi Yechanan, you can't bring any low quality produce. Therefore, anything that grows in a flower pot or in a ship is automatically out.
Which brush is that?
That was the last brisa. Even if it grows, as far as a gag and a churva, if you have, maybe the kore, fine, you can bring and you can save it stuff in. However, only if it is from the roof of a cave, or that's that parashi learns, or from a churva that was worked.
So, Rabbi Yochanan takes three braises. The first one is...
He says you have a braise that says you can't bring at all. Okay. I say basically like that. You can't bring any low-quality stuff, so not from an osis or a spinner at all. And also not... So what's the one braise that said maybe the code is fine? So you have a braise that says maybe the code. I don't have to agree with that, because I have another braise that says any maybe code. That's the point. Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that's fine. You have other braises. I don't have to agree with those. I don't have to agree with those braises because I have this one. And here is where the Rosh comes in and says that to begin with, the Gemara knew that Rabbi Yechanan doesn't really have a problem with the Gag and the Churva. Mm-hmm. He only had a problem with Osis and Spina. Therefore, when he brings a Braise over here, Osis and Spina, and he may be Kolaker, then good. That works exactly with what he said before. According to everybody else, you would have to say that Rabbi Yechanan first said that Gag and that Gag and that Gag and Chorva are completely not. And now, on the basis of this price, we're going to have to distinguish between different kinds of roofs and different kinds of Chorva.
He would make an exception.
He would make it. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, we said, B'chol and Enin Boyz Elamin Amurkhov Chola, all Menachos, or the Omer and the Shteh Lechem, whatever, only come from the best quality grain. And the Mishnah mentioned, and the Mishnah went on and mentioned places, it mentioned the places where they would bring flour from Hachilah. The Mishnah mentioned places called Machnes and Zatcha, which are Alpha Lachilah, so for the first quality as far as Lachilah, and the second best was Aparayim in the valley. And since we're mentioning Aparayim, so the Gemara mentions another short thing involving this place, Aparayim. We see that they grew a lot of grain there, so Amri le Yochna and Mamri le Moshe. Yochna and Mamri, who were the two famous chief magicians of Mitzrayim. So when Moshe comes to do the oysters, the most in front of Paroi, the one where he throws down a stick and it becomes a snake, and he puts his hand into his shirt pocket, and it comes out with saras, and so on and so forth, and later on with the makos. So Yochna and Mamri, they don't believe that Moshe is doing this, that he was sent by Hashem. They think he's just a magician. So they say to him, Kevin at the Machnes Laofarayim, where he brings straw to Ophirayim. Ophirayim, as we're saying, in the Mishnah, it's a place where they grow a lot of grain. So they have a lot of straw over there. What are you bringing? More straw in here. Like Mitzrayim is full of kishuv. We need more of your kishuv over here.
I think Kumi doesn't bring out the name. It says the second part, Kevin at the Machnes.
Yeah, he doesn't bring the names Yochanan and Mamre. But yeah, I don't know. Because it wasn't a gay over there as far as Kaf. Oh, yeah, in general, Rashi only brings these things when there's somehow a gay at the Kaf. Okay. Amar Lahu, says Moshe answers them, just the opposite. Amri Inshi, it's like people say, Lamasa Yarka, to a place to a city where they sell lots of vegetables, Yarka Shkil, that's where you should bring your vegetables, because anybody who needs vegetables is going to come there. So in other words, Pekes, I'm coming to the place where they're doing a lot of kishuf, and I'm doing my thing over here also. So according to Miyochas Rashi, like they said Lasonis, so he answers them with Lasonis. Like he's not giving them a serious answer. However,
we have enough.
So he's answering them Adaraba, that's the place you would go to. However, the Ran brings an explanation in his drushes that what they're saying is just the opposite. You guys think that it's kishuv. And therefore, if we were to do it anywhere else in the world, they wouldn't know the difference. They would think, okay, you guys come, you do it, obviously you must be great magicians. But when I come here to Mitzrayim, and you guys, you great, you world-famous magicians, can't duplicate what I am doing over here, then that makes it clear that it's not magic. It's min hashamayim, that Hashem is able to change nature, and you are not.
Who says that?
That's the Ran says this in his Drasha. Okay. Mishnah says, continuing on the topic of where you can bring grain for menachos for, again, no, Ran, the Drosha Taran, he has a collection of Droshas that he said in the shul or whatever in different times, his community, to teach them basic, in his community, someplace in Spain, I don't know. Anyway, I Barcelona, I think, I don't know, whatever. Okay. In those drushes, he explains a lot of, he lived in the 1300s, in those drushes, he explains a lot of important ideas of Yiddishkeit that people needed to know and to keep in mind. It's called Drusha Saran.
Do you have them on Hebrew books?
Yeah, it's probably available on Hebrew books, yeah. Okay. So the Mishnah continues. Continuing on the topic, where are you allowed to bring the grain from a Nachas for? Again, like Rashi said in the previous Mishnah, and like he repeats here in Rashi Ksav Yad on our Mishnah, we're talking specifically about the Omer and the Shteh Lachem. According to Tosfos, we're talking about more generally about all Menachos. Okay, so the Mishnah says, Ein Mevi'in Lo Medeit HaZvolim, you cannot bring the flour, the grain for it from a place that, from a field that had to be fertilized. And Rashi gives two explanations. One is because what if it wasn't completely fertilized, then it means that some of the grain that comes from it is going to be poor quality. The other explanation Rashi Ksav Yad says is because the fertilizer makes everything stink over there, so therefore it makes that the produce of such a field has a bad taste to it. So you can't bring from there. Volonia Beis HaSholchin, also not from a field that had to be irrigated, because again, then it's too dry, or you don't get good quality produce from it. Volonia Beis HaIlon, or from a field where you have trees growing, because the trees suck up a lot of nourishment from the ground, so therefore the grain that grows in such a field doesn't come out in good quality. The inhevi kosher, but if you brought from some places, such places, then b'di'evit is kosher. Again, even according to Ula and Rish and Rabbi Yechon, are not really as far as Bikurim, because they have to be Shvach Eretz Yisrael, but the Omer and the Shea Lachem and Menach, that's more generally enough. Okay. Case that Huay, so how do you do it? How do you get the best quality grain, says the Mishnah? What you do is like this. Nora Shana Rishana, you start by plowing the field the first year. Nora means when you plow it without actually planting afterwards. Harisha, the word Chorish usually means plowing like right before you plant. Nora means to plow the field just in order to, the point of it is basically in order to kill the weeds. This way any seeds or whatever weeds or grass that grew there will be killed off. That way you don't have other things.
Maybe they did
the plowing in a slightly different way, but the point is they did it in such a way to kill the weeds. That way no weeds are going to be growing there, and that way you don't have anything else taking away nourishment from the ground. That way you have the ground has its full potential. That's the first year. Over Shana Shnia, then in the second year, Zoda Kodim LaPesach Shivim Yom, you plant the grain 70 days before Pesach, so in other words, about the beginning of Shvach in a regular year, or the beginning of Adar Aleph in a leap year. Again, here you have the question, are we talking about specifically barley for the Omer, or Tosfos discusses that maybe if we're talking about wheat, then not necessarily, then wheat, we would, the pastures have to be planting earlier in the season, because wheat has a longer growing season. Anyway, so you plant it 70 days before Pesach, Ru'osa, solus meruba, and that way the grain produces a lot more solus, a lot more fine flour than regular grain that's grown without this kind of thing of a year of the field lying fallow for a year beforehand and so forth. Case that bojus, how do we check to make sure that it's all solus, if it's properly sifted? A gizbar machnit yodil seichon, the gizbar, meaning the treasurer of the Beis Mikdash, puts his hand into the container of flour. And here, by the way, also Tosfos points out, if we're talking about the Omer, why are we using the word gizbar? The gizbar is the treasurer of the Beis Mikdash who buys flour for the Menachas. The Omer is not handled, the Omer is not necessarily handled by the gizbarim. It would be the shluchei beistin. It would be people that beistin sends on that night and then that morning or whatever to deal with it. So therefore, Tosfos says that's one proof that we must be talking about, about wheat for Menachas as well.
Maybe the shluchei beistin and the gizbar could be the same.
It's possible. Maybe that's how we could plan for it actually. But it's the bright thing, using the expression gizbar. Then it implies that we're talking on a more regular basis. Anyway, so the gizbar sticks in his hand, all of the ksula, and if flour dust sticks to his hand, then it's possible. Actually, not penna until he sifts it again, because that's how it has to be. He puts his hand in, and if any flour sticks to his hand, then he knows that if any flour dust sticks to his hand, then he knows that there's still dust mixed in over there. And then he tells them, you have to sift it again with the kind of sieve that we learned previously. No, that's the point. If you have that the solus is like semolina, it's a coarser flour, then that way none of it is going to...
fine flour.
Right, that's the thing. We always translate solus as fine flour, but it's not fine as in powdery, but not fine as in powdery, but fine as in good quality. Yeah. So therefore,
it's granular in nature.
Well, it's granular, but it's not powdery. Like, it's not powdery like the flour we buy in the store, right?
Fine flour is powdery.
Right. Okay. But this is the kind of sieve I've mentioned before. This is the kind of sieve where it mentions in Pirkei Avos, Shemaitzia as the kemach, the kelet as the solus, the good kind of Talmud where you have a sieve that lets out the kemach, the dust, and it keeps the solus, the good stuff. That's like the Talmud over there, the fourth kind of Talmud who knows to forget the irrelevant details and remember the main thing. And the Mishnah finishes being hislia, if the flour or the grain got wormy, psula, then it's possible for Menachas, as we'll learn in the Gemara. So the Gemara starts.
Do you need to say that?
No, we're going to see. Yeah. And we're
going to
see. No, it's not so obvious. We'll see how much it needs to become wormy. We'll get there. Okay. So the Gemara starts. Kesad oisa. Okay, so we said in the Mishnah like this. Kesad oisa. How do we do in order to get good quality flour? We said not ashrana vishana. We say you plow it the first year, and then you leave the field empty for that year. So we have a question. Heichi kama, what does the Mishnah mean? Does it mean nora shana rishana? Does it mean you plow it the first year, and again, ushniya nora vizora, then the second year you also have to plow it, and then you plant it. So in other words, you have to plow twice. Now, according to Rashi Ksav Yad, well, you know, let's put in the Gemara, let's put in the question in the Gemara, and then we'll talk about the different possibilities. So does it mean that you, again, plow it the first year, then you plow it the second year in advance, and then you plant it? Or maybe what it means is you only have to pre-plow the first year, but the second year you can just plant without. Now, according to Rashi Ksav Yad, which is the real Rashi, you definitely have to plow right before you plant, because that's any farmer plows right before you plant. So the question is, on the other hand, we're saying there's a difference between nor and chordish, where chordish implies the kind of plowing you do right before planting, and nor is the kind of plowing that you do to kill weeds. So according to Rashi Ksav Yad, the question is, do you have altogether three plowings or two? Do you have a plowing to kill the weeds the first year, then you leave it empty, another plowing to kill the weeds early in the second year, and then a few months later, you go to right before the planting, you do the kind of plowing, the harisha that you do right before planting. Altogether, it comes out, you've plowed three times. Or does the Mishnah mean you just need the nara in the first year, nothing in the second year until right before you're about to plant, 70 days before Pesach, and then you do a harisha like you do before planting?
It's very hard to believe that the second year you don't need a nara, you know, plowing that takes up the weeds.
Well, that's the question. Not necessarily. Once you killed them the first year, they may not have grown back the second year. Okay, according to Miyuchas Rashi on the top, the question is rather one or two plowings.
Yeah, okay.
So in other words, according to him, there's no actual plowing right before the planting. Is it that you're planting the first year, and is it nora and then leaving it empty and then right before and then the second year also you need a nora and then a few months later and then a few months later you plant, or is it that you just need one plowing and then you're planting sometime in the second year?
So is it nora harisha, or is it
no? According to Rashi Ksav Yad, is it nor harisha, or is it just nor harisha? According to Miyuchas Rashi, is it nor and harisha, or is it just nor?
Okay, Toshma, the Tanya, we'll prove from a Braita, Amar Abdesi, Af Chitei Karzim, Kfar Achim,
he says, also wheat from Karzim and Kfar Achim, these are named the places, Nivin Hoyum Ilmole Smochus Yerushalayim, were it not that they were close to Yerushalayim, Hoyum Vien Mehen, they would bring the Omer or the Shtel Lechem from them. So here you have a number of different explanations. Well, okay, let's learn the Gemara, and then we'll talk about a number of different explanations. Lefisha in Mevi'in, at the Omer, Elamin Asodet, Hamud Romois, Vahamnum Nores Lekach, because you bring the Omer only from fields that are south, and that are plant, and that are plowed for this purpose, Shabahen Chamazerachas, because on such fields the sun shines, umehen chamashekas, and on those, the sun is still on that side when it sets. So before we go further, let's explain first of all. So first of all, Tosfos, we're according to their shita, we're not only talking about the Omer, but they're talking about all menachos, so they explain that, then why is the Braita mentioning only the Omer? It means the Omer as well as other menachos. However, if we say it's talking about only the Omer, then you would have to explain, because Tosfos, that the place is not called Karzim, and we're talking about wheat that grows in Karzim, we mean the place is called Chitei Karzim, which happened to be a place where they get borrowed from. Now, what do we mean, were it not that it's so close to Yerushalayim? Here also, you have a couple of explanations, and the problem is that you have, in Gemara terminology, the word Ilmole can have two different meanings. Ilmol Tosfos, elsewhere, talks about, if it's spelled Ilmole with an aleph, it means were it not, with an aleph at the end. But if it's Ilmole with a yud at the end, means were it. So it's two opposite meanings, but one, it depends on the spelling.
With an aleph at the end?
It means not, like in the Russian loy. And if it's with a yud at the end, it means if it were.
If it were not.
Right. So therefore, that results in two different explanations here in the Gemara. Do we mean, Miyuchas Rashi says, what it means is, the problem is, these places are so close to Yerushalayim that they're not among the mountains that surround Yerushalayim. They're in the valleys, and they have all the other good qualities, but they're in the valleys, and therefore the grain that grows there is not the best, like we learned before. That grain that grows in the valleys isn't as good. But if it weren't for that, they would have brought the oil from them. Rashi mentions that what it means is the first explanation is similarly, that if they were in the mountains, they would bring from them because they are close to Yerushalayim. The second explanation, and they are southward and so forth, and the other explanation, if they were close to Yerushalayim, we would bring from them. The problem is they're too far away, and we looked before, the Omer and the Shtelach are supposed to be brought from as close as possible to Yerushalayim. Anyway, then also, what does Rav Yossi mean when he says Mudromos? So Rashi learns that it means that they're towards the south of Eretz Yisrael, and the advantage of the south, therefore, is that even during the winter, the sun is in the south. The sun never is on the north side of the sky in the northern hemisphere. But during the summer, the sun will rise in the northeast and set in the northwest. But during the winter, it'll rise in the southeast and set in the southwest. But in other words, it'll be on the south side during the winter, and that's when you need it. So therefore, there's an advantage to places further south in Eretz Yisrael because they get more sunlight, basically.
During the winter, they're on the south side?
Every day the sun spends a certain amount of time on the south side of the sky. Because the sun goes around the ecliptic, which is a couple of 20-odd degrees off the equator. So most of the northern hemisphere is north of that. So on a day, the Earth is tilted, right? But
in the summer, it's close to the sun.
Fine, but the point is, in other words, like this: at the equinoxes, at Kufas Nisan and Kufas Tishrei, the sun rises exactly in the east and sets exactly in the west. During the summer, it rises in the northwest and northeast and sets in the northwest. So it goes around more or less three sides of the sky.
Northeast and northwest.
Yeah, and during the winter, south and southwest. So most of the day spending in the south, but during the winter is the time when you need the sunlight in order to help the produce grow, because that's the growing season. So therefore, Rashi says there's an advantage to places that are further south in Eretz Yisrael. So that's what we mean Mudromos. Tosfos brings another explanation. It doesn't mean that they're geographically south of Yerushalayim. It means that they're a southward-facing slope. It means the slope of the hill where it grows is facing south, because that way they're facing the sun, and that way they get more sunlight, and that makes them better quality. Anyway, so that's sort of Yossi is saying, that you bring the Omer, and according to Tosfos, other menachos as well, only from fields that are mudromos, again, either geographically south or facing south, and ones that are plowed for that purpose. And he continues, because that's where the sun rises and sets. Case that oyster. So how does he do it? What happened to the other Gemara? No, I don't know. Maybe they moved it. Okay, whatever. Case that oyster. How do you do it? Says Rav Yossi. Not a shonu b'shonu shniya. You plow it with near the first and second year. You plow and you repeat the plowing. You plant it 70 days before Pesach. That way you're planting it at a time of year when you have the sun is starting to come closer to Eretz Yisrael, because halfway through the winter already. So it's about halfway through the winter. So that way the sun is starting to head northward again. Then when you do that, if you follow that schedule, he says, you'll end up with a stalk of grain where the stalk is a zeres, which is a half an amma in length, and the shibolus, the part that has the seeds, the kernels of grain, is zrasayim, is two zrasim. Now normally, grain isn't like that. Usually the stalk of the grain is much longer than the part that has the seeds. Here, Rav Yossi says, if you follow these rules, then you're going to end up with the other way around. You're going to end up that very little, relatively little, of the energy that the plant puts into growing is going to go towards the stalk. Most of the energy is going to go into seed.
Short stalk and big seed.
And then a lot of seed. And that way you'll get a lot of solace out of it.
So that's why you have to go through all this.
Yeah. Then he continues, Vakoso Ma'amar Vadosh Vazoro Bora Vatokan Manakin. You do then all of the malachas involved, you harvest it, you bundle it up, you thresh it, you winnow it, you pick out the dirt and whatever, you grind it, you sift it, or maybe it's a gizbar, and now you bring the finished flour to the gizbar, to the treasurer of the Mikdash. The gizbar machnik yadil secha, the gizbar sticks his hand into it, im ultaba ovak, and if dust stick to his hand, Oymaloy, then he tells him, Chazer v'napa oytashniya, go sift it again, because again, then you have the lower quality stuff, the 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 the, 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 the flour powder in there rather than the coarser stuff that's supposed to be from an office. Okay. Mishum Rav Nathan Amru, they said in the name of Rav Nathan, a different way to accomplish it, Gizbar Soch Yadei Shemen, the Gizbar anoints his hand, smears oil on his hand, Umachnis V'Soicha, and he sticks it into the flour, Ad Shemala Kol Avaka, until he takes out all of the dust, because the dust will more easily stick to his oily hand than the coarser flour. So therefore, Rav Nathan says that's another way of accomplishing it. Rather than telling him to sift it again, the Gizbar can use his oily hand to take out any flour dust that's left in there.
So because when the hand is oily, then
so therefore the flour dust will stick to it more readily than the service will. Yeah. Okay, the point is, katani miyach kodesh v'shoina. The bottom line is, the Braisa mentioned that he plows and plows again. So there you have the answer, that you have to do the nir a second time. So therefore, that's the Mishnah evidently means. Again, let's go with Rashi Ksavyad. It means, in other words, you need near the first year, near the second year, and then obviously, right before you plow, you need another, before you plant, you need a Chadrisha, because that's the normal way of doing it.
And that's because?
Because we use the expression, Nor Shonar 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 Shonar. So that implies that he's doing twice. Okay.
That
would go according to the first possibility, that you have two separate nodes. Okay, but according to your own svara that you're trying to learn from this braisa, the fact is, machnisim like katani shayna, braisa katani shayna. The fact is, the Mishnah didn't say anything about repeating. The braisa mentions shayna. In other words, not necessarily do you have to say that the Mishnah and the braisa are agreeing with each other. The Mishnah can have its position of how many plowings you do. The braisa can have a different position.
Shayna meaning what?
Meaning repeating. The Mishnah didn't say the word shoyna that you repeat. So we're asking, when it says nara shana shoyna, what are you doing the second year? But the fact is, the Mishnah didn't mention the word shoyna that you repeat. The Braisa is saying shoyna, so maybe they're talking maybe two different opinions. Okay, the one says holy kasha, okay, but that's not a contradiction, because you don't have to say it's two different opinions. Kan ba'avuda, kan b'sha'ina avuda, because you could say that the Mishnah is talking about when the land had previously been worked, therefore you don't need as much plowing ahead of time, and the Braisa is talking about where the land hadn't been worked before, and therefore you need extra plowing.
So you could still argue.
Okay. So the question now becomes my habiyala. Okay, what's the bottom line? You could answer that maybe the Mishnah or the Braisa are talking about different scenarios, but it is a doichek. What's the bottom line? Do we have a nor in the first year and no nor in the second year, just a harisha right before the planting? Or do we have a nor the first year, a nor the second year, and then harisha right before the planting?
The second year just before the planting.
No, but that's the question. The answer is Toshma, come, we'll prove from another Braisa, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. What you do is like this. Nor chetia v'zerea chetia, nor chetia v'zerea chetia.
No.
What you do is like this. No. Well, your Gemara say near. Mine says nor. It's supposed to be nor. Near would be here. Nor chetia v'zerea. Near is a noun, meaning plowed. The plowed field is called near. Nor is a verb meaning plowed.
So it's supposed to be
nor. So nor chetia v'zerea chetia, nor chetia v'zerea chetia. What you do is like this, the Braisa says. You plow half the field in 1 year, and then the other, that you plow the whole thing, and but you plant, you plow, or you plow the whole thing, but you plant half of it. Then the following year, nor chetia v'zerea chetia, the following year you plow and leave empty the part that you planted last year and plant the part that where you didn't plant anything last year. So therefore it comes out, in other words, that you're only doing near one time. So in other words, each part of the field is only getting near one time before you plant it.
You do two half times.
So you do, right. And now, the reason why, now, the fact is, Rashi says, you can't plant in the same land every year because that's going to eventually weaken the fertility of the ground. Therefore, you plant it by halves. That way, you can get something out of it every year. But in other words, the point is, the Mishnah didn't mention that because the fact is, the half that you planted the first year, you can't use for Menachos because it hasn't followed the rules that we say in the Mishnah. Or not, you can't, you shouldn't use it for Menachos because it's not the best quality because you only plowed once. So therefore, the part that you get from the second part, this part that you get from the second part, where it was left fallow for a year before, that's fine. You can use from an office. That's better quality. So the Mishnah didn't mention this idea, because then it would have to say that you can only use from the second half, so therefore the Mishnah gave an alternative way of saying.
You alternate every year.
In other words,
half the field.
But because each half of the field stays empty for 1 year. That's what our Mishnah was saying.
Right.
So in other words, our Mishnah was taking the view that if you want to have the entire crop of the field as kosher for menachos, then the only way is to leave it fallow for an entire year. And you just plow ahead of time to kill any weeds that might otherwise start growing. The Braise is telling us an alternative way to accomplish the same thing, except that with the Braise's method, you're only going to have a crop from half the field each time. And second of all, the crop from the half of the field that you planted the first year, you're not going to be able to, is not the thing that you can use for a killer from an office, because it's not the good quality stuff. Only from the second year and on. And
what are you going to do with the first year?
You use it for chulin. You use it for regular.
What's the question?
Nothing, no question. The Mishnah didn't mention that possibility for one thing, because then you only get half, and because the Mishnah would have had to clarify and say that what you grew that first year is not the ideal thing from an office. So instead of saying it that way, the Mishnah just put it in terms of leaving the whole field empty the first year and then planting it.
Someone said doing it in half decreases the quality of the crop.
And I didn't say it decreases. I said it decreases the quantity of the crop. You only get half as much.
So you could still use it.
But what you grew the first year, you didn't leave that part empty the year before. Therefore, you can't use it. Therefore, you can't use it because you said you need to use the good quality stuff where the field was left empty for the year. That's
right.
But the point is, we see from this braisa that it's acceptable as long as it was only plowed once, meaning 1 year before the plowing and before the planting, and according to Rashi Ksavyad, you are going to have a plowing right before you plant, just because that's what you always have to do, because it's soaking up the ground, so the seeds will take root, but you only have 1 year, you don't need two. Okay. Fine. Amar Rav Yechanan. Says Rav Yechanan, continuing on the topic before that we said, so we mentioned on Amud Aleph, he repeats it over here, Ein Mavien at the Omer, Elamin Asadot Hamud Romos Shabbat Eretz Yisrael. You only bring the Omer from the field that Hamud Romos in Eretz Yisrael. We said before, Rashi says that it means that they're geographically south of Yerushalayim, and Tosfos says it means that they're south-facing slopes. Because there the sun rises facing them and the sun sets facing them, because again during the winter the sun is mainly only traveling around the south or around the southern part of the sky. It rises in the southeast and sets in the southwest. So this way they have maximum sun exposure. Tanya Amitochi, we learn similarly in Ebraisa. Abashol Omer Hoya Bomi Dikas Beit Mikla. So Abashol says that the Omer would be brought from the valley of Beit Mikla. Kibas Gimel Sinhoya. It was a place about the size of three stars. It was the size of three base stars. And especially because we learned before, we learned back in the sixth parak that you harvest three stars of barley for the owner. So this way they had a field for this purpose. The Southern Madremis Hoya. It was a southern or south facing field. Again, the sun would rise there, the sun would set there. Nor chetia v'zerei chetia. And they did, like we said in the previous braisa, they would plow it and plant only half each year. And that way each half of it stays empty for 1 year. And that way it keeps fertile.
Once the process started, you could use it every year.
That's the point. But only the first year, isn't it?
The first year you had a question.
Right. Okay. So the Gemara tells an example. Rav Chilkiya bar Tuvi Havalei Tarna Da'ara. Rav Chilkiya bar Tuvi, who lived in Babel, had a corner field. He did this. Nor chesti v'zorah chesti. He did this. He would plant only half of it each year and leave the other, and then just plow the other half ahead of time and leave it empty for the year. The Oda Al-Khadre, it resulted that it produced twice as much flour, twice as much wheat as a regular field would produce. And he was able to sell this wheat for solus, for fine flour. Smida means fine flour. It's the equivalent of the Aramaic equivalent of solus. Now actually the Rashi Ksavyad that you have in your Gemaras actually says that he sold it from the Nachos. However, the problem with that is Rav Tovi bar Kisna, first of all, lived in Babel, and second of all, he lived long after the Korban. There are no Menachos. How is he selling it for Menachos? So the proper Rashi Ksavyad, which comes from Ksavyad of Shittim Kubetis and was more recently printed, says that what it is he sold it to rich people. Not he sold it for Menachos. There were no Menachos in his time. He sold it to rich people who wanted soil, who wanted good quality flowers. No. In other words, the point is, if he had lived in the time of it, he actually could have sold it to Menachos, because he lived after the Korban, the only people who would want to buy such good quality stuff would be rich people. But this way, in other words, he could get a high price for it. And actually, this prosthemist says an interesting idea. Now, you would think, okay, so he's got twice as much, produce. Big deal. He's only planting half his field. So after all, he's not necessarily coming out ahead, except for the fact, fine, it's better quality flour.
He's coming equal, but that's...
He's breaking even, basically, but he's not necessarily, doing better. But he, so he says...
doing because he's got quality and quantity.
That's the point, in other words. Means we don't just mean that it produced twice as many stalks as everybody else's. It means it produced stalks of the kind we mentioned in Amud Aleph, short stalks and large things of grain, and therefore you actually end up with more grain than you with more
not
grain than
more,
from more grain and in better quality, right? So therefore he actually ended up coming out of it.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Then we said in the Mishnah of Inisliapsula, we said if the flour or the grain developed worms, then it's possible. So let's learn about that. Turn it up on them. So if the container of flour if most of it develops worms, then it's possible. Then in other words, you can't take out the minority part that wasn't touched by worms and use that. Because ruba kikolei. The chitin chase liu ruba and stolet. And also if the grain itself, if the wheat kernels themselves were attacked by worms, ruba and mostly stolet, then they're possible. Now here you have a few different possibilities. What it means, well, one second. Boy of Yemia, what do you mean? Beroiv chita or beroiv stock? As far as the flour, okay, it's clear what it means. It means most of the stock. As far as wheat though, what do we mean? Do we mean beroiv chita, that each wheat kernel, most of it was attacked by worms? Or does it mean beroiv stock? It means that most of the stock that you have within there, you have whole wheat kernels that weren't touched by worms. Which one do we mean? And then you have an explanation. Then you have an explanation within the Rambam that Noisa Kalim say on what the Rambam holds on this. That just the opposite. According to Rashi's explanation, Roiv Sa'ah would be the Chumrah that you have. Most of the Sa'ah was torn by worms, but we still have a Mirut on it. Where none of those grains were touched in the Mirut, and yet we're arguing maybe they'll be possible. According to the Rambam, the explanation might be the other way around. Roiv Chita might mean that when are we saying it's possible, if most of a particular kernel of grain was attacked by worms, then that already makes it possible. Or would we say Roiv Sa'ah doesn't have to apply to most of the Sa'ah? And the answer is Teku. So we don't know.
One kernel, it could be a whole Sa'ah.
Yeah.
So now
the question is, if somebody is mafkish such wheat or such flour that has worms in it, and we're saying that it's possible because of a mum, does he get malchus like the way a person would if he's mafkish, an animal, with a baal mum?
Yeah.
Do we say, given the possible kabal mumdami, since we say in the Mishnah that such grain or such flour is possible, then it's the equivalent of a baal mum? Maybe not. Maybe the concept of baal mum only applies to an animal.
In which case, he wouldn't have.
Then he wouldn't have malchus. And the answer again is teku. So we can't give him malchus because of the topic. But the Rambam says we give him makas malchus for doing such a thing.
Okay.
Which is that the base didn't give him malchus at their discretion.
So it's the same.
It's not necessarily the same. Yeah, but we have different Rishonim talk about different possibilities. Makas malchus may not be as hard as regular malchus. It may not be the same amount. There's a lot of possibilities.
Malchus is 40.
Malchus is 39. Unless he can't live through that, then he gets left.
Malchus
Maldus might be left. It might be or whatever. It could be as many as based in seas as necessary, but it might be lighter blows. There are a lot of possibilities. Tnanhof. Okay. Similarly, we learn in a Mishnah in Midos, Kol Eitz Shenimtza B'Kelah Posel Lagavi Mizeach. Any piece of wood where you found worms in it is possible to go on the Mizeach. And for that reason, in fact, it says that the Kohen and the Balin woman, they had a chamber of wood where they stood the wood for the best profession. The Kohen and Balin woman would spend their time checking the wood to make sure there's no wood.
Obviously, you cannot eat it. How can you put it on the
chair? No. Hold on. Before, when we were talking about flour, if you have flour where some of it was eaten by worms, not necessarily is it trace. If there's worms in it, obviously you can't eat the worms, but not necessarily is the parts that were eaten by worms. You take out the worms, and then you can eat the rest. But, and with wood, wood is not edible.
No, I'm saying for food.
But it's pasteurized. If you take out the parts that were, if you cut out the parts that were attacked by worms, yeah. Okay. So, Amar Shmuel, Loshono al Alach. This that we're saying that the whole piece of wood would be possible is only talking about if the wood is still moist. Because then, there's nothing you can do. If you have a part that was attacked by worms, you can't scrape it off. Avod Yavish, but if the wood is dry, then it's okay. Go raise a kosher. You can scrape off the part that's attacked by worms, and the rest of it is kosher to use on the back. So again, so again, if you were to be mastish such wood, and Tosfa says, maybe we're talking...
Scrape wood?
No, wood that has worms in it. Worms with worms. And Tosfa says, maybe we're talking about specifically over here, if it was wood for a korban etzim, according to Rebbe, where we learned earlier in the Masechta, that wood is considered a full-fledged korban, so then maybe you have the same dinim of Balmum. So Maoshi Yoko Olam Mishal Balmum. Again, the question would be, would a person get Malchus for being mastish such wood? If we're talking lach, or even if it was Yavish and it wasn't squid. Again, given the Pasol Kabalmum, do we say since Pasol is like a Balmum, or Dilma Ein Balmum El of the Behemah? And again, the answer is taken. Now, why is Rava asking the same question twice? And not only twice, we're going to actually have two more times in our parish where we're going to have that he asks the same thing as far as oil, and he asks the same thing as far as oil, and the same thing as far as wine, that if you were to be mackish oil or wine that has a problem, do you get malchus? So why did he ask that? Yeah, So Tosfos just says maybe there's some kind of tzrichusa. And the Radvaz has an interesting explanation. Maybe what it is Rava didn't necessarily ask them in the order in which we have them in the Gemara. He may have started by asking about wood, and the answer was teku. Then he went asked about wine. Then he would have asked about wine, which is less, which is, after all, it's not burnt on the Mizeach, it's poured on the Mizeach. Then he would have asked about oil. Then finally, he would have asked about oil has become part of Mincha. And then finally, he would have asked about wheat, which itself is burnt on the Mizeach as a Mincha. And each time we couldn't find an answer. So they might have put them in the order as the Sylvius go, but not necessarily did he ask them in that order.
Okay.
So the Rambam Shita seems to be that, at least this is the way the notes of Kalim explain it, that if any individual grain of wheat was mostly attacked by worms, then it would make all the other wheat that was with it possible. And actually, okay, so the Radvaz says, we're not talking about if you didn't grind it yet, then fine, you take out that bad piece of wheat, and that's it. What we mean is, if you had a piece in there that was mostly eaten by worms, and then you took it and ground it together with the rest of it, and now you realize afterwards, all of that flour that Amam learns is going to be possible on the basis of the question that we left unanswered over here. Because that Amam learns that when we say, that when the question was, Roy Chita, the question might have been that if even most of one single kernel was attacked by worms, that might be enough to castle that, and therefore now it's mixed in with everything else, and therefore now it might make everything possible.
What's interesting is, okay, let's take this position that he takes, the Rambam. If you apply it to our Mishnah here, so you would reach the same conclusion. Why do you have to make a difference between wheat and between...
No. Because like this, if it was only attacked by worms after it became flour, then definitely it would only be, as the Braita said, only if ruba, only if most of it was attacked by worms.
So flour is ruba.
Flour is ruba. Chitin is also ruba, but the question is, what do we mean ruba? Do we mean that roi chita is enough to pass all that grain, and therefore when it's mixed in with all the other ones and then ground up together, then it's no good? Or maybe the roi star, maybe it still has to be that most of the star, the grains of wheat have to have been attacked, even in the meal of each one, by worms.
Roi chita would mean what exactly?
Roi chita, again, according to Rashi, roi chita would mean that each grain of wheat was that it would mean that most of each grain of wheat was attacked by worms. That would be roi chita. In which case it would be a kula. Only if that would be possible if we took that wheat. According to the Rambam, it's a chumra. If you have one single grain of wheat where most of it was attacked by worms, then that grain, if now it's ground with all the other ones, will make them all possible. Those are two different ways. Okay. So the Mishnah says, next, okay, so we talked about wheat. We're talking about wheat and barley. Now let's talk about oil. Mishnah says, Koya Alpha Lashemin, the city of Koya, a city in Eretz Yisrael, is number one for oil. Abishola, Mishmiel, or Regev the Eivra Yagin. Abishola says, second best is Regev placed in Eivra Yagin. Again, Kol Arot is Tayyuk Sheris, all lands. All areas of Eretz Yisrael were kosher to bring oil. Elam Ikan Hoyim Avin, but these are the places where they would preferably bring it from because there you have the best quality oil. From Koya Tekoya is in Eretz Yisrael, and I don't know. So you have a Tekoya in the territory of Yehuda, and you have apparently another one in the territory of Asher. It's not clear from the Mishnah which one, but one of them. And Regev Eivra Yajin, there's a speaker in Chelet Chavdalot, actually, where the Rebbe talks about the idea, what's Abishol's point? I mean, doesn't the Tanakhama agree with the fact that Regev Eivra Yajin is a good place for oil? Why do we need Abishol to be saying it in a way like as if he's arguing with the Tanakhama?
Not everybody agrees that Eivra Yajin was good for...
No, that's as far as Omer and Shtelechem, not as far as oil for Menachem. No, the Rebbe explains in the speaker, the Rebbe explains, the idea is, oil represents bitterness. Because in particular, we have oil burns completely. Later on, we're talking about oil for the menorah. It burns completely. It burns quietly, unlike wood, which crackles and whatever. So it's a symbol of bitterness. So the question basically comes down to what kind of nachla of yours is capable of inducing bitterness? Is it only Eretz Yisrael, which was given to us by Hashem? Or is it also Eivra Yarden, which after all, how did Eivra Yarden become Jewish territory, is based on, it's the root of the Losata, is based on the initiative of Bnei Reuven and Bnei Gad and Chatzishev and Menashe in asking for it. So therefore, it was granted, it had to be ratified by Hashem, of course, but it started with the root of the Losata. So that's the argument, basically, is which one is capable of inducing the kind of bitul that oil represents.
Even though it's kind of going against the margin, the second Maravim after 40 years, and they expanded. They took those lands without being asked.
Well, they took those lands without that. They came on their own initiative, and originally Moshe yelled at them and so forth. But then they agreed.
No,
even
I'm talking about the after 40 years, when the Yeshua
centers. No. That's something else. No, we're talking about Eivra Yajin, Reuven, Gad, and Chatzishev Menashe. When they conquered those lands, different. And they came to Moshe and asked for those lands, and then Moshe was angry at them, and then they made a deal. Because he figured you're acting like the Meraglim, you're afraid to go into Eretz Yisrael, and they explained that, no, we'll leave our wives and children and our cattle over here, and we'll go across the Yarden to fight and help the Jewish people conquer Eretz Yisrael proper, and then Moshe agreed to it. Even so, I mean, the Medrash says it wasn't necessarily the best thing for them to do, and in fact, those Shvatim ended up going into Golos first, but nevertheless, there was still, in a certain sense, what they did is that they should have preferred to live in Eretz Yisrael proper. But on the other hand, it had an advantage in that they showed that they wanted to expand the area that has to do.
Did Moshe Rabbeinu ask the Eivishter?
Of course he asked them. Of course.
And the Eivishter said, what?
A deal's a deal. Fine. If they want to do this, they can. But the Moshe, it still wasn't the best thing for them to do. But they're short of Moshe later. All right, let's go on anyway. Okay, Mishnah continues. Again, you can't bring oil from olives that grew in a place that had to be fertilized for the same reasons as in the previous Mishnah. Either part of the field may not have been fertilized properly, or the fertilizer gives an off taste to the oil. I mean, the place where they had that fertilized, the general, that's done. Or from a field that has to be irrigated, or for a place where you have olive trees, and between the trees you have grain growing, for the same reason, grain takes nourishment out of the nutrients out of the ground that the trees could have used. The heavy kosher, but if you did bring it, then b'di'evit kosher. Another one, the Mishnah says, ein mevi'en anpak tan, it's actually supposed to be anpik noin. You can't bring anpik noin, which the Gemara will explain later on, that's how it's really supposed to be. You can see in Rashi Ksavyad, for example. And you have it in other Gemara's thought recorded that way. So you can't bring anpik noin, which is oil from unripe grapes, unripe olives, rather. V'im hevi kosher, but b'di'evit, if you brought it, then it's kosher. You have different gear stories over here, whether it's b'di'evit kosher, or is it b'di'evit even possible. We'll discuss that more tomorrow, that's the shame. You also can't bring from olives that were soaked in water, because that reduces the quality of the oil. And then Miocha Sadashi says, what we're talking about over here is olives where they're such low quality that you're not going to get oil out of them unless you first soak them in water. So you can't bring such oil. Or from olives that were pickled or cooked. And again, either it means that they just happen to be pickled or cooked, and now you want to press them, or according to Miyoko Savashi, it means that the only way to get oil out of them is to pickle them or cook them, then that's low quality, and you can't bring that. Being heavy, also, shluchim is cooked. And yes, being heavy, and if you brought such oil, also, then that's possible. So the Gemara starts off with...
By pressing fresh olives.
Yeah, we'll talk about in the next Mishnah, which we'll learn tomorrow about, which and how you go about it. Okay, so the Gemara starts off with a little bit of a gotcha about oils. You have a pasuk like this. In Sefer Shmuel, in Shmuel Beis, it describes like this. You have David's oldest son, Amnon, had that great Tomer. We talked about it in Sanhedrin, and therefore Tomer's full brother Avshalom held it against him, and he seized his opportunity a couple of years later and killed Amnon. David was extremely angry at Avshalom for that, and Avshalom escaped and ran away to his mother's father, the king of Geshur. Time passes, and Yoav, David's general, says, you know, it's not right. Avshalom should be able to be brought back over here. So he decides, how am I going to convince David? So he decides to do a play act. The prophet tells us he called a woman from Tekoya, that's what the Gemara is going to bring over here. He asks her to pretend to be an almana who has a problem, that one of her sons killed the other one, and now the family wants to kill the second son because they argue there's a Goyale Adam, and then I'm going to have that story. And this way David will tell her that it's okay, I'll make sure your second son stays safe and I don't kill him in order to destroy your whole family. And then you can explain to David that this is all a marshal, and the nimshal is you shouldn't be angry at Avshalom forever, you should bring him back. So the pasuk says...
Why David didn't want to bring Avshalom?
Because he was angry at him. Okay, and even after that, after he brought him back, the pasuk says for 2 years he still didn't want to see Avshalom's face until Avshalom forced Yoav to bring him to see David again. Whatever, it was a whole thing. Anyway, the point is, Vayishlach Yoav Tekoya, the prophet says Yoav sent to the city of Tekoya, Vayikach Misham Isha Chachama, he brought from there a wise woman. So the question is, Maishna Tekoya, why at the city go to Tekoya? And it doesn't mean, Marshall points out, it's not like he knew that there was a particular smart woman over there. The way the prophet phrases it is, he sent to Tekoya because he knew he was going to find a wise woman over there. So why in Tekoya is it moving more likely? Because they regularly use olive oil, they regularly eat and use it, whatever. Because we said in our Mishnah, it's the best place for olive oil. Therefore, chokhmah is found among them, because we learned in Herdias that one of the things that helps the person remember their learning is being rugged, is shemen zayis, is consuming olive oil.
That's a mashal. How can you say that?
No.
Oil makes you smart.
No, that's what it means. The pashtut.
It brings back the shikha.
Right. Even if a person forgot their learning, then shemen zayis restores it. Yeah. So therefore, the spice is
simple.
Okay. Well, you need more than that.
You need much more than that.
Okay. You need also the bissel that we said that Siddhas explains.
You need people okay. Before anything else.
We learn in a blaster. You have a pasuk in Parashas Vezoyis HaBracha, where in Moshe's Bracha, he says, "V'tovo b'shemen raglei." He dips his foot in oil. Zech chelkei shel Asher. This refers to the territory of Asher, Shemoshech shemen kamayim, where oil flows there like a in the north of Eretz Yisrael, in the Galil.
The
East Galil, I think. I'm not sure. Shemoshech shemen kamayim, where oil flows there like a spring. And by the way, some of them are partially explained. That's a Tekoya of our Mishnah, maybe the Tekoya in Shevet Asher. In fact, you have the famous explanations why did they have to light the menorah for 8 days by the original mess of Hanukkah? Why did it take them 8 days? You have the two famous explanations. One is because they were telling mess, so they need 7 days to become tahor and 1 day to press oil. But the other explanation is because this Tekoya in Shevet Asher is 4 days journey away from Yerushalayim, so 4 days there, 4 days back today. Okay. Anyway. So they said a story like this. One time the people of Ludkia needed oil. Ludkia is a city in Hufar. Nowadays I think it's in Syria or something that's called nowadays Apakia. Whatever. In those days it was a big city. Yeah, it was a city in northern Syria, I think. Yeah. But they needed a lot of oil. Minulahan Kumustus Echad, so they appointed an agent for themselves. They tell him, Leich Bahavilan Hashemid, Meir Riboy, go purchase for us a million dinars worth of oil. Meir Riboy is 100 times 10,000, so a million. Halach Yerushalayim, so he goes to the capital city of Yerushalayim. Omru Loi Leich L'Tzur, so they tell him, go to the city of Tzur, to the port of Tzur. Halach L'Tzur. No, in the Pashas, they were friends, but they didn't have any Yerushalayim. So they tell him, go to Tzur. Halach Hold on. They sent him from Yerushalayim to Tzur. Some of them are Persian faith. Tzur may not be Tyre, because why would they send him there? Eventually he has to go to the Galil. Tzur may have been a large city in the Galil. Halach with Tzur, Omer Leich with Gush Cholov. You go specifically to the city of Gush Cholov in the Galil. Halach with Gush Cholov, Omer Leich, they tell him, Leich, it's a plenial of Sada Halav, go to so-and-so in such and such a field. So he goes there. So he finds that, by the way, Rashi refers to the story in his Pirush on the Poskim, but he just mentions the beginning of the story, and only here in the Gemara that we have the whole thing. Okay. So, Umosse, he finds this guy, that he is Oizek under his olive trees. Oizek, Rashi Ksaviad says, means that he was digging under his olive trees. He has to dig occasionally around the roots to aerate them. Chosefus brings an explanation that it means that he was building fences around them. Anyway, whatever it is, he's doing the work himself rather than having his workers do it. Amaloi, so the Goyish messenger says, Yesh Hashemin B'mei Ribei Shani Tzoris, do you have a million dinars worth of oil that I need? Amaloi, so the Yid answers, Hamtin Me'ab Shatayim Malachti, wait until I finish my work. Yes, but wait until I finish my work. Hamtin Ashasim Malachti, the Goy is waiting there until the Yid finishes his work. La'ach Ashasim Malachti, Hifshul Kelev La'achorov, after he finishes his work, he flung his tools behind him and walking home behind the sackle of Baba Derech, and as he's walking along the Yid, the farm owner, as he's walking along, he'd see every so often a rock in the ground and take it and remove it from the ground so that the ground will be better.
The rock absorbs the oil?
No, not so much that it absorbs the oil, but it reduces the fertility and whatever of the ground. You want good quality ground where you can plant that doesn't have rocks.
Except the rock.
Yeah, so you say he's getting rid of the rock as he's going along. Well, Omaloi, so the guy says again, Yesh lach Hashem in the mayor, everybody, what is this? You have a million dinars worth of oil. It's not possible. If you yourself are doing all this work in your field, you must be a poor person. Kim Duman, apparently the Jews must have been playing a practical joke on me that they sent me to this poor guy. Well, Kivin Shi Yil, when the Yid and the guy reached his city, reached his house, then his maidservant brought out for him a kettle of hot water, and he rinsed his hands and feet with them after a dusty day of working in the field, and then she brought out for him a pitcher or a basin, whatever, of gold full of oil. So now already you start seeing the guy is packing up so forth. The Tov of Yodav Verdaglav, and he dips his hands and feet in there. L'tayim Mashanema, and the Taka fulfills what it says in the Pasuk, V'tov of Hashem and Raglav. So there we see literally that the Yid is dipping his foot in oil, like Moshe's bracha. Okay. L'acha sha'ochlo v'shosu, the Achas of the Yid invited the Goyin for a meal. After they ate and drank, muddled l'shem and me'eriba, he goes and measures out for him the million dinars worth of oil. What do you mean you're not supposed to eat with a Goy? Where do you get that from? You're not supposed to be alone with a guy. We learned to never desire. But okay, he wasn't a fascist. He wasn't alone. He had his other household members with him, whatever. Modded by Shemin Meiriba, then he measures out for him the million dinars worth of oil. So sure enough, he really does have. Amaloi, and then the Yid says to the guy, do you actually need more? Amaloi Hain. So the guy says, actually, yeah, I do need more. I'll be done, but I don't have any more money. I only brought a million dinars with me. I didn't, yeah.
A million dinars.
Yeah. Amaloi, so the Yid tells him, Im after Rachel Lukas, you know what? Fine, you want to buy more? Kas, you can buy more. Bani Elach Imchab Etel Damav, I'll come along with you back to your city and I'll collect the money over there.
Sounds like
Saudi Arabia. Come, I'll buy it. Yeah. Yeah. So he measured out for him, another 180,000 dinars worth of oil. Now, how are you going to get all that oil from Gush Cholov back to Lukia? Omru, so they said, they didn't leave a single horse or mule or camel or donkey in Eretz Yisrael that they didn't rent to carry all this back. Then when they came to Lurkia, to where the guy was from, so the people of the city come out to praise the guy. Look, you fulfilled your mission. He tells them, loyally, Kalsini, don't praise me. Praise the guy who's coming along with me. Not only he was able to measure out to sell me. Yeah, because he had to collect his money. Not only he was able to measure out and sell me oil for a million dinar, the Harid Noish would be the Shemayna Atzir River, and yet I owe him another 180,000. And the Gemara finishes off with Kayim Mashanema. This story is a fulfillment of the positive. Yesh Mis Asher Ve'Ein Kol. You have a person who acts rich, but he really doesn't have anything, which Marashal says, like the guy over here. Everybody's thinking he's rich. He has all this oil, but he's telling them, actually, I'm 180,000 dinar in the hole, yeah. Mitzroishish, and then you have a person who acts poor, like this Yid, Vahoin Rav, and really he has a fortune. He's acting like he's poor instead of hiring servants and whatever to do the work in his olive groves. He's doing the work himself, but really he has all of a sudden he's got golden bowls over there, and he's got a million and 18 and 108 mitzvahs. He acts like he's poor. He's doing the work himself, but he really has a fortune.
Rosh means
poor. Mitzvahs means that he acts like he's poor. Yeah. So that's Marsha explains that part, that he acts like a rich person, but really he has nothing. Like here, everybody's coming out and praising him. Look, you're this great, rich guy. You accomplished so much. And he's telling them, here, you don't realize that now I'm actually not only I owe 180,000, I'm in debt to the tune of
180,000.
He's still a rich guy. Yeah, but still, it's the ain't co, but relative to what you think, then I don't know.
Rush means poor.
That's what it says. That's how it is.
Why?
I don't know why. Why does any word mean what it means? I don't know.
Rosh, Reish, Aleph, Shin.
Rosh, Reish, Shin. Reish, Shin means poor. So the Rosh means poor. Rosh, Reish, Shin. Okay. Yeah, everyone. So yeah, so that's the story. In other words, so that's the point. That's the point that we see that Sequoia and other areas of Eretz Yisrael have a lot of oil, and therefore we're saying in our mission that that was preferably where they would bring oil from a Nachos instead of a Noah.
Is it still true today that Sequoia has a lot of oil?
No idea.
Olive oil?
No idea.
Galil has?
The Galil has, I think, still. Yeah, they have a lot of olive trees there.
Yeah?
Yeah. But, I mean, things have also changed over time. There's actually, it's interesting, there's a Mishnah in Peah. The Mishnah in Peah discusses the question of, you know, the dealing with the dinim of shikha, when if you forget produce in the field, you have to leave it to the aniyim, and you have Rabbi Yossi, I think it is, says in a Mishnah over there, ain't shikha lezeisim, there's no such thing as shikha with olives, so you have a Yerushalmi that says, Rabbi Yossi doesn't mean in a general way that there's no shikha for olives. He's talking about in the period after the Romans destroyed Eretz Yisrael, and most of the olive trees are gone. So then there's no shikha for olive, because anybody who's lucky enough to still have an olive tree is always going to remember it. He's not going to forget it.
They don't remember the taste of olive oil?
No, that's not what it means. Rabbi Yossi is saying, in other words, that anybody at that point who has an olive tree, they're going to remember it. They're not going to forget it. So therefore, the olive tree, the fact that they have an olive tree and that they have olives on it. So that's the point. In other words, so there was a period in Eretz Yisrael when most of the olive trees were destroyed. But nowadays, by the Romans. So nowadays, you have olive trees in Eretz Yisrael, but I guess not to the same extent that you had before, but I don't know.